Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 152 with Miriam B. Schiffer, author of Stella Brings the Family, illustrated by Holly Clifton Brown and published by Chronicle. Miriam's picture book asks readers to consider the dilemma for the child who doesn't see themselves in the commonplace. Consider, as readers will, what you would do if you had two dads and were asked to invite a special person to your class's Mother's Day celebration. Her story handles the scenario with poise and grace, and Holly's illustrations are a source of peace and kindness throughout. It's a book to treasure and one for which I hope many of you will do exactly that. Enjoy the listen. And if you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device through your preferred podcast host or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to iTunes recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring these chats to even more ears. On that note, it's time to start episode number 152 of the podcast with Miriam B. Schiffer. Let's get busy! Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Miriam Schiffer. And hey, congratulations on your debut picture book.
Thank you, Matthew. I'm so delighted to be here talking with you tonight.
Well, I am totally honored that you would come talk to me about a debut book because I feel like, who am I? Especially having gotten to read this book. Miriam, okay, let me just lay it on thick in the beginning because I'm not going to be able to hide it.
All right.
I love your book, Stella Brings the Family, is your debut picture book, and it's wonderful.
And Thank you.
It has an immediate home I'm just going to put it out there that I think that as soon as librarians, as soon as people who work with children read this book, they're going to see immediately that this is a book that needs to be on our shelves and needs to be read. Maybe it's even because this year was such a big year for the We Need Diverse Books movement.
Mm-hmm.
But Miriam, you've written a really important book. And I'm glad that it turned out the way that it did.
Well, I'm glad you see it that way. That's what I want it to be for kids. I hope that they really can benefit from it and enjoy it and feel reassured by it.
Well, why don't I let the listeners out of the mystery here and give you a chance to just share what the story is all about.
Sure. Stella Brings the Family is about a little girl named Stella. She has two dads. And she has a great family who takes care of her and they love her. But she's faced with a dilemma, which is that Mother's Day rolls around. And her teacher announces that they're going to have a Mother's Day party. And every child can bring a special guest. And the teacher doesn't put any limits on who that guest should be, but the kids start saying, oh, I'll bring my mom and I'll bring my mom. And Stella starts to worry because Stella doesn't have a mom. She's got two fantastic dads. So the book is about her process of figuring out what she's going to do for this party and how she's going to find a way to feel that she fits in and that she belongs and that her family belongs.
And she does. And she does in a really great way. And I think off the bat, I have to, I think I just, I don't know if the word is commend you, but I do feel like on my heart, I need to commend you because you didn't write a teacher as the bad guy here. The teacher is sensitive in that way that you wrote that she says, it's Mother's Day celebration, but invite whomever's special to you. We don't have it written like, invite the special lady in your life.
You know, that's, I was really deliberate about that because so much, so many of these tough situations in the world, no one is deliberately excluding somebody. No one does it deliberately. It just sort of happens when we're not paying attention. And I wanted this teacher to want to be an ally to Stella, but this kind of went under her radar and she didn't realize the situation it would create, but she didn't deliberately create it. And then she did help Stella fix it once, it became an issue and she realized it. So that was important to me, that there wasn't a bad guy. It's just that with a lot of these things in life, we're not bad guys, but we need to really be sensitive and think about other people and make sure to include them.
Well, when you're saying needing to include someone, I'm actually seeing this from two different levels too, because you've got this, what is like a preschool class of children who've got a diverse set of parents just represented among them, that you've got a child with two moms and you have Stella with two dads and we have significant grandparents in the picture and as well as parents in the picture, moms in the picture. But so the children are going to see that when they read this book. But I also think, Miriam, that you're almost giving words to teachers that might not know how to handle that situation. It's almost this unspoken guidance you're giving that, look, when you, I'm reading it going like, oh yeah, there's the right words to say to invite everyone. We're having a whatever celebration, but just bring your special friend, the person that's special to you. I think that in that way that picture books are windows into these different worlds, we are in a time in our schools where we have great diversity and sensitivity is a big deal. And I think that it's also challenging because we want to be sensitive, but sometimes that can kind of make us clumsy over how to do it correctly.
Oh, that's great to hear that you think the book will be helpful with that. When I was writing the story, I understood the problem early on, which is, and I can go into my inspiration for that. If you want, nice. I could start there. This came about as an idea to me because I used to talk with a colleague a lot about children's books for her daughter, and I'd give her advice on I try to help her find books that had two moms. And one day she was lamenting just the lack of books available for her daughter to see their family reflected in their picture books. And I was thinking about what it means to be a child who you don't see yourself in the common culture around you. And when we wrapped up that conversation and I went back to my desk, I was thinking about that child, and that's how Stella popped up into my head. I thought this child has a dilemma. There's, this cultural event happening and it excludes her, and what's she going to do? And so that came to me pretty quickly. But then I thought, how is she going to solve it? And soon I realized I was thinking about my colleague's daughter and thinking about how she has everything she needs. She has the care and love of her family. And so I realized that the solution had to be, had to focus on the fact that her family's already enough. Her family is already bringing to the table what they need to bring. And it's just about sort of discovering that for Stella. So, that's how I came to the solution, where Stella keeps having to talk to the kids about, like, no, that's not the problem. It's not that I don't have this or I don't have that. The problem is simply that I can't make this Mother's Day party work for me.
It is so subtle in that way. I look – this book makes me excited just about all publishing, and knowing that this is the direction we're going, that – showing cultural differences and I don't know any sort of differences at all, because we are all so different, that it doesn't need to be a big deal either. It can be that it's not that she has, I don't know, two dads, and the one dad is really upset that the teacher would be so insensitive to, for Pete's sake, have a Mother's Day celebration. No, it's that that's not our focus. Our focus is the dilemma of, I've got so many blessings in my life. How do I serve this the right way?
Yeah, how do we focus on those blessings and make those blessings work?
Yeah.
So that's what I really wanted to feature was that,
Cool.
she had everything she needed already.
Well, you did a great job with it. And I like that you are featuring a same-sex couple, or multiple same-sex couples in your book, because I feel like that's another thing that we, okay, so I'm going to talk a lot from the teacher perspective here.
Yeah.
I'm going to put on my teacher hat, because that's where I see the this book was really speaking to me, that I think
Great.
that when we're as a librarian, when we're looking to buy books that show this diversity, there are few books that I could name, at least, that do this work so naturally, like Stella does. So much of it is let's write a book called "I Have Two Dads and This Is a Big Deal," or "My Mom's a Homosexual and Let's Talk About What That Means to My Class." It's
I wanted it to feel somewhat natural, although it is an issue book. It's not a book that just reflects
That's correct.
it, it does make an issue of it, but I wanted it to be somewhat natural and in that, and also I wanted the other children, I wanted Stella to see that there are other children who didn't fit in perfectly either. Like one child comes with his grandmother and so there were a variety of issues that the kids were facing. I wanted to connect that thread of, we can support each other when we're facing these troubles. Even if we're not all the same, we can really support each other. And sometimes we'll have these struggles in common across, different situations.
Yeah, we when we're looking at purchasing books, these book lists that have different themes, and Stella's going to end up on one of these lists, right? Because of the nature of what you've written, that it's going to be, here are books featuring same-sex parents in picture books. To have it be handled in this way, that it can be for such a young audience, and be, I mean, not only just that you're taking on this idea of having two dads, but also you're showing, I mean, so much that Holly has done as well in the
Oh,
illustrations
she's
today
amazing. Yeah.
is showing that, like, we've got, I mean, I was, one of the things I was walking away with was just the child with the two moms. I love that the kid looked more like one mom than the other. And this
Yeah.
is like a thing too, that we have interracial families where you just look more like one parent potentially than the other. And that's a thing too. This is an opportunity for us to look at a book and say, that's me in that book. That's my situation, or that's my friends, or that it we are all that we're all in the same class together, and there's so much diversity represented in a single classroom that even though you've written one book about one kid that has two dads, you could have five more books in this series looking at the other children in this classroom and going, oh, look, they're all different for all these
Right.
great ways that you are that same different.
That's what I wanted those more minor characters to be a bridge to thinking about this in a more universal way. And I think also kids, they have a really strong sense of fairness and they want to help each other out and they
Oh,
don't
yeah.
want their classmate to feel sad or excluded. And so I wanted to find a way to really like connect the kids in the class over, the dilemma that Stella faces.
Well, you've done a good job, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
I like it.
And I'm glad you brought up Holly Clifton Brown, the illustrator, because I'm just amazed by how beautiful this book is. It's more beautiful than I could have ever imagined, and so I feel very lucky for that.
I like the way that Holly, I don't know Holly's work outside of this book that I know of. I'm sure I've seen her illustrations in some other things, but in particular, I like how Holly draws hair.
I don't know that it's silly to say that, but I just, like, I feel like there's a little bit of life and movement in her hair. And, of course, Stella is this, like, curly, redheaded, beautiful child.
Yeah.
But there's just, there's a life in all of these characters in just seeing, in seeing them. There's just, I don't know, she's made it, Holly's made it, the entire book is a warm and welcoming and environment where this is a place where even the problem that Stella has of who should I invite doesn't feel like a, like threatening, like we need to be worried.
Yeah.
It feels like Stella's got it under control. We just need to give her a couple pages to figure it out, but she's got it.
Yeah, I that's great that you point that out. I mean, the illustrations do really have a peacefulness and a kindness, and that is the backdrop through which Stella grapples with this situation. And I think you're right. Like, Stella comes across as a strong character. She's got a lot of support, and she just needs a little time to figure out what she's going to do.
Yeah. When you sold this book, when you were going through this process, did you have any say at all in the illustrator? Did you know at all that Holly would end up being the one to do this, or that her style would get to be how your characters came to life?
You know, that's a great question. And people always ask me, you know, oh, did you pick the illustrator? And I said, no, I sold the text. And then, you know, the publisher, the editor is in charge of choosing the illustrator. But I wanted to, you know, be eager and participatory. So Kelly Cipinari, our editor, she offered, you know, she would take my suggestions, and I wanted to seem eager. So I studied a lot of books, and I made a list of suggestions for potential illustrators. And then once Kelly said to me, well, you know, we were thinking about Holly Clifton Brown, I looked at her illustrations and I thought, wow, that is perfect. I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to that. So Kelly did a great job. All the folks at Chronicle did a great job.
I was just going to say that publishers in general, there's a gift there to that editor, that art editor who, or whomever the official person is that finds the pairing, or the group of people that finds the pairing. But Chronicle does it well over and over. Enough that I notice that I'm like, man, who are these people that they're pairing? They're so amazing together. That it just, well, it's I'm sure I've uttered this phrase before on this podcast, but it's magic when it works well.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can tell. It looks as though, and I've been around publishing enough to know that you didn't have any sort of connection with Holly or any sort of, it was just that you had to have the faith in the publisher to find the art that makes it make the most sense and tells the story the best way. But you look at this book, I look at this book, and I don't see any other way to illustrate this story. This is the way that that Stella was meant to be shared.
Oh, that is a lovely way to put it. I'm so glad you think so. And I'm so delighted by the illustrations and just the whole appearance of the book that I'm incredibly grateful.
Have you gotten to speak? Have you gotten to have any communication with Holly?
You know,
that it's done?
You know, I haven't, but I figured I haven't been down this road. I don't know if there's a way you're supposed to, but I thought maybe I'll just reach out to her because I want to tell her how much I love this work.
Well, and she's from London, so you could always, like, Skype with her.
Oh, great idea.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
That would be.
We could do a Google Hangout. We can have you two meet in front of children to see, or someone could do this. I'm not putting myself in front. But how fun would that be to, the idea, I think, of there's a lot of things in publishing that I think are new to children, maybe even new to adults. I should not take that for granted. But the idea that you might never meet that person that's illustrated this book. That's a very personal thing. I mean, these are your words and your story that you're putting out in front of people that people are bringing to bedtime with them.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
To know that you might not know. I mean, I don't think children have experience at all. Some adults don't have experience with creating something with someone they've never met, or in your case, with someone you've never actually worked with before.
Right, and you just entrust it.
Yeah, that a trust is.
But you know, it's part of what's so liberating when I was writing it, is that I could always imagine on every page that the illustration would do the best possible job it could with my words. And it was really liberating. I wouldn't have, like, it wasn't my burden to think about the illustrations, and it liberated me to be more creative with the words. So it works, it really works for the writer. It's not just about giving something up when you give up control. It's about really gaining some liberation to be more creative with your words.
No, wait, does that come? That's a great attitude, Miriam. That's a stellar attitude. Does that come from all the time you've spent in children's publishing already with the book review stuff that you do with young children?
That's an interesting question.
That's a really great attitude that you have.
That's an interesting question. I think it started earlier. So growing up, my mother has a children's book business, and so she taught me about this process, how oftentimes the writer and illustrator never talk. And so I knew this was how it worked. I went in knowing, like, this was not my job to think about, like, I want the picture to do this. So I think, like, knowing that system really sort of helped me, like, get in the right mindset. And then I found it to be so helpful too. As far as the book reviews, we co-author a book review column, for young children, a NACI journal. And we do, it's wonderful to see how it's great when the words and the pictures, they both do different pieces of the puzzle, but neither does the whole thing itself. They need to work together, and so that's really exciting when you see that.
I mean, that it's what the word collaboration is all about. When it's the end product that is created is greater than the sum of its parts. That it's not me and you just working together. It's that the end result is something, you know, that transcends what I could have done myself.
Right, and there were all sorts of surprises like that when I saw the early drafts of the illustrations, just things that I hadn't even imagined. The way Stella's friend comes home with her to help her talk to her dads about the situation, just a lot of the little touches in the illustrations were just great surprises for me.
Yeah, pardon me if you're hearing it too. I'm like flipping back through the book as you refer to different pages, like, oh, just fondly looking at all these different things.
Oh, I'm flipping too, just to make sure I don't miss anything. So, you know,
no,
hope you can't hear it.
there's just details that for all that you've realized the story and have conceptualized the story, to see the illustrator come in and kind of just make it the whole picture, make it a visual story as much as it is told through words is, I don't know, it's just a magical thing. Yeah, that's just what it is. That's awesome.
I agree with you on that one.
How lucky we are that we get to not only get to read great books as a child, but then grow up and be in a position, whether it's that you're doing this review column or I'm a librarian or just that we're parents ourselves, that we get to continue to be with these books because it's awesome. I think it speaks to the strength of picture books that they just, I mean, this is the book format that just sticks with everybody.
Mm-hmm. I love, I never stopped reading children's books, you know, even in my teen years and early adulthood, I've always just really felt a connection to them. They distill messages in a simpler, more powerful form in a lot of ways.
No doubt.
So they never go out of style, even if you are, a single 20-something, you can still read your children's books.
Okay, so being that you've always read children's books, has that made you think about writing for children for a while, or is that a recent thing?
That's an interesting question. So I did a little – I've always liked writing. Mm. And as far as writing for children, I did a little bit in high school, and then I ended up in an MFA program in creative nonfiction. I was writing humorous essays, and I was very invested in reading and keeping up with children's books, but it was after grad school that I just started writing them one day again, and then I just realized that this really, I love this, and I'm not half bad at it, so I'll keep working on it. There were like ons and offs with it, but a lot of writing in between in terms of essays and writing grad school and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then it just, it worked out then to have that. I mean, I don't know. It's just having you go back into picture books after having the appreciation and love of picture books that you mm-hmm. do, I just think is a good thing. So I guess that makes me think then, since it's been since grad school-ish time, yeah. if I'm hearing that right, does that mean that you've also thought about sharing your stories in front of children? And I say that because you're a debut author, which means you get to start thinking about what school visits will be like. And on the other side of it, and I know this comes up way too much on this recording, but yeah. it's because of the admiration I have. I love school visits and when authors come and make that mark on children, because I grew up not having school visits, and I think many of us grew up not having school visits, but this is a time when kids have just different access than we did to authors and to illustrators and to cartoonists, and it's just an exciting thing to know that you will get to have that influence on children.
Yeah, that's pretty, it's an exciting thought. I haven't been too deliberate yet in thinking about it, but that may be something that I, you know, start figuring out in the next couple of months. There are a lot of area schools that might enjoy that.
Yeah, we're going into summer, so you've got
a little time to think about it. Oh, that's true. I got a little time off.
Okay. Right, that works out, but it's going to happen. And I, that magic of however that happens, that someone somewhere is going to see you at a library conference or at a book expo or something and ask about school visits, and then you get to be in front of children, not only reading to them, but talking about what it means to be a writer. And to, I mean, for you, it's, I feel like it's going to be all about the way that you leave room for the illustrator and have that appreciation and that liberation. And I just think that's,
you know,
that's cool.
I haven't really fully thought about that yet. What that would, how much that would mean to see how children receive the book, in a setting like that. So it does sound like something I'm going to take a lot of pleasure in.
Well, have you had, because I know by now you've gone through FNGs and you also have now like hardcover mm-hmm. Of your own now. Have you had the chance to read Stella at story times or in front of an audience of children yet?
No, I haven't. I've only read it to my children.
See, because that's a thing that I've become fascinated with, this idea that when you write, the parts, the lines, the anything, any quality of the story that you've written, mm-hmm. You just, there's no way to anticipate the way that a crowd of children will react to it until you just read it to them. And I get that experience all the time because I'm reading books to them all the time, but I didn't write the books that I'm reading to them. So I don't have that like thing in my head of, oh wow, they're reacting to this thing and they really like that. Which every time I read a book, you know, to multiple classes or over the years that I read to them, I get to know, we were talking before recording about Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. Mm-hmm. And that's a book that I know where to wait and where to move fast and how to read certain ways, because I've the word I used with you was I've performed that book for kids a lot of times, but you haven't had the chance.
It might be a whole new book once I see what the kids are really, what they pick up on and what they want to talk about. That'll be really exciting.
Well, I think just to be able to also see or witness and appreciate it from the way that when you publish a book, it becomes all of ours. It's no longer just yours. It's no mm-hmm. longer yours and Holly's and your little baby.
Right.
It becomes all of ours. So we have this kind of shared ownership in the way that it's read. And I mean, gosh, Miriam, I can't even wait for you to like go to a library and hear another adult read your book. Maybe your critique group has done that. If you're in a critique group, you've heard someone read it aloud differently too. But even that, there's a lot of wonder in this that I'm, I don't know. I'm all smiles for this.
I have a big smile just thinking about it. So that would be pretty cool.
Well, we'll have to see on Facebook or Twitter or wherever you share it. Make sure that you're public about that, because that's something that is so exciting to just, I don't know. There's something about maybe even just about being a librarian, like getting to, it's been really special the way that social media has now connected us all. But to get to see, you know, we're at a time now where those of us that are in states that have state book awards, mm-hmm. Especially the ones like in Maryland, we have a student-selected state book award. So we choose a selection of nominees as librarians, a committee does, and then the kids read those books and teachers read aloud the books to the children throughout the whole year. And then in April for School Library Month, the kids read and vote on the books. And so we now have the results of the winners from this year. But I'm starting to see over social media a number of authors talking about different state book awards, recognizing their books. And it's that getting to celebrate, being connected and getting to celebrate and seeing you as well being a part of that. It's just neat that we're all part of it together. Yeah,
it's giving me a lot of pleasure so far to see the impact it's making. And I think it'll be a really wonderful process to watch it unfold further when the book is out.
Oh, good.
And it'll be in the kids' hands.
Thank you. It will be. And this will be, when this goes out, the book will be available. So we, ladies and gentlemen that are listening, yeah. This is the time. Hit the ground running. And I can't wait for just the way it connects. Miriam, congratulations again.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
And before I let you go, I'm going to ask you one more question if you're up for it.
Yes.
Cool. And that is?
Let's have it.
Here it is. I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament. And Miriam, I'd love to know what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you'd want on your team and why.
All right. Well, I hope I can pick someone mostly on the merit of books, not kickball skills.
By all means.
Because I'm going to pick Anne Morris, who actually passed away this year. She's a children's book author of nonfiction books illustrated with photographs. And she's written books such as Families, Loving, Houses and Homes, Shoes, Shoes, Shoes. And I love her work. She writes very simple text, but it's perfect. And it carries these very moving, meaningful illustrations of families and children from around the world, from many different types of diverse homes and families. And I actually had the pleasure to know her and work for her briefly in grad school. And it gives me a lot of pleasure to continue reading her books to my kids now. So she's on my team.
Yay. Well, way to go. That's great to know that you've not only had someone that you respected so much in children's publishing, but then got to know her and got to be a part of her life for that part.
Yeah, I feel lucky. So,
well,
and you've got to read her books if you haven't yet. You'll love them.
Oh, no doubt. Well, Miriam, I feel lucky that I've gotten to talk to you tonight, and that we have Stella Brings the Family now out in the world for other people to connect with and enjoy. I wish you a lot of luck, but also just thank you. I'm very grateful that you are behind this book and that this story is out there for our readers.
Well, thank you so much, Matthew, for the kind words and the really pleasurable conversation. And I look forward to sharing the book, especially now that you've given me a lot of ideas for how I can do that more.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. Or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.